Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. It is Sunday evening, and that familiar slap at the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap. Boxing is back, y'all. Boxing is back. We're going to talk with Scully today. The professor will be back on in a little bit. And we're going to have... One of the good friends of our show, Mr. Brad Melson. Mr. Melson, if you don't follow him on Facebook, is a coronavirus survivor. And we're going to talk to him a little bit about what that deal, that ordeal was like. What's life after the virus? And I guess some of the questions that are going to come up naturally are about vaccines and different things like that. So we're looking to have a great program tonight. As I said, the professor will be back. Going to grab Scully on here. Much as we call Scully, you think that it would be an instant connection, but always seems to want to play around on Sunday. I was listening to an interview this morning with Blue Nose, Young man seems to be a very well-rounded young man. Looking forward to seeing Mr. Lopez back on another show. Always very crowd-friendly. He was talking about perhaps getting it on. Scully, how you doing this evening, my man?
Yes, sir. I'm ready. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing good. Well, look. Not only do we have boxing back, but it seems like we have it back on an accelerated schedule here. Tuesdays, Thursdays, and I believe this week we also have a Saturday affair coming up. So first of all, Scully, what's your general opinion? Boxing's back, and what do you think about the bubble?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm optimistic, but it's funny. I was just literally like 10 minutes ago, I was having a discussion with my wife. She's a nurse, and she was saying that the talk among her colleagues is that this thing, it's gonna maybe die down a little bit, but then it's going to come back however these pandemics work. But she said it's going to come back with a vengeance, that in a few months, it might even be worse than it has been. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not really sure. You know, I don't know. I'm a little skeptical about things. But as far as on my end, you know, with my interests with Arthur, I haven't heard anything on as far as he goes yet. So, I'm still kind of playing the waiting game.
Now, you know, don't quote me, but I think Canada still has a travel ban.
Right. Well, that's the last I had heard. And because he's promoted by Bob Arum, and I guess Bob Arum was saying he'd like to do these different shows, but it would be relegated to just United States fighters. So, you know, that limits the field a little bit.
But in spite of that, Scully, we have had some very good fights and some very competitive fights. Did you manage to watch any or all of them?
To be honest, I have not been able to catch up. My cable situation right now is a little up in the air, so I have not been able to watch any of the fights.
Oh, you missed great action, especially Lopez was with his new trainer, Buddy McGirt, and he had a good performance. Getting it with a new trainer is always, a little, sketchy at first. But it seemed to me, watching them without the crowd, it kind of seemed like, if you go and watch a sparring session in the gym, you can hear the trainers telling, each fighter what they wanted to do. Of course, you hear some of the things that you might not hear during the regular time, like, the footwork and that type of rhythm. But by and large, it was like a televised sparring session.
Right.
So I'm kind of, to a professional boxer, does that take away from his performance?
Well, I tell you what could happen, with fighters. It's almost like, it could give you the psychological idea that it's almost like, because there's no crowd, almost like it doesn't count. Like the crowd, you can be in the middle of a round at a certain level, and then you hear the crowd, especially if you hit the guy with a good shot. Either you hit him with a good shot, or he hits you with a good shot. Or they think he hit you with a good shot, and they go, and the crowd goes crazy, and that motivates you, that spurs you on. So eliminating that is very, very difficult for fighters. Fighters often, like they are influenced without a doubt by the crowd, for better or worse. Every single round, the crowd is even sometimes you'll hear people in the audience being critical of you, whatever the case may be. There's a lot of mental aspects that go into it. Not having the crowd is dangerous for a guy. You get a guy like, say, Vinny Pazienza, somebody like him who fought, with the crowd in mind, using their energy, and for him to fight without a crowd, I'm sure if you asked him, it would be extremely strange, and it would be a different kind of challenge that maybe some other guys might not have to face.
What about for the guy that's not the hometown guy now? Now he doesn't have to worry about coming out to the booze and that crowd let down, especially if he's a favorite, now he doesn't have to hear that. All he has to do is go out there and fight. Do you think that might, instill a little confidence in the opponents?
Sure, because, a lot of guys, they feed off of their hometown crowd. They have that advantage. Now you take that away, psychologically, it could really even the playing field, or even give the perceived lesser guy an advantage that he wouldn't normally have. So there's definitely a lot of things that come into play under these circumstances, for sure.
Professor, I see you here, man. We've missed you. How have you been?
Well, I'm bouncing back. I'm bouncing back slowly but surely. I had 3 major tragedies within my immediate family, back to back to back, and in the middle of relocating. I'm still in Virginia since March. I've been here, which, I'm born and raised here. And I don't know if I'll be going back to the Big Apple. I'll be going back for business, but I don't think it'll be for to stay. But besides that, I'm excited about boxing, baby. Shakur Stevenson was looking good last week. The undercards was good. We've seen some quick knockouts. You know, I'm ready to get this thing rolling. I heard you guys chopping it up about, you know, the effect or on the fighters without a crowd. And my opinion on that, definitely it will affect the more flamboyant, you know, outstanding personality type of fighters that engages with the crowd, get the crowd involved, you know, either if it's with their ring walk, if it's, you know, the press conferences, those things without the crowd, it you know, it does take away, especially from those type of fighters. But at the end of the day, even with the crowd there, it's only two men in that ring, and the best man shall prevail.
You know, speaking of the fight this week, we did get a chance to see an interview with Tyson Fury. He was talking about his two-fight contract that he's signed for, I mean, the two-fight proposal that he's supposedly signing with Anthony Joshua. But he also has one more bout with Deontay Wilder. Scully, I'll start with you here, man. What's your opinion on this? Do you think that, you know, chances are maybe this time next year we could possibly see a unified heavyweight champion?
I mean, I think I can speak for most people and say that would be the goal. That would be most welcome. I hope so. I mean, I certainly hope so. It'd be almost surreal to have an undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. You know, which and in my eyes, boxing absolutely, if any weight class, they should have an absolute unified heavyweight champion of the world. You know, living in a world with three or four world heavyweight champions is really, really bizarre for a guy like me. So I'm hoping that comes, you know, but I have my doubts because, you know, as we know, the boxing business tends to get in the way. The sanctioning bodies get in the way. They, you know, they do what they do. So I'm not going to bet my life on it. I'm not going to hold out hope for it necessarily, but, you know, I do have hopes for it. I hope it comes through.
What about you, Professor? I know you've, whenever you've had time, I know you've probably followed this closer than anything else. Were you surprised about any of the remarks that were made? Do you think this is Wilder's kind of last hurrah?
No, I wouldn't think it's Wilder's last hurrah. He only lost one fight. You know, he's only lost one fight. This is what boxing need, man. Now people always starting to go, and we're starting to see people fight each other. And if we can get more of that, and I'm all in. Now, on the other hand, you were speaking about Undisputed. Piggyback off Scully, you know, the business, you know, if it's up to us, of course, we would love to see Undisputed, but we know boxing business, well, you know, if it does happen, it won't last long. They will find some way to, oh, we're going to strip you of this if you don't fight this mandatory and this and that. So, you know, they'll find a way to eventually strip them for at least one of those belts after that particular boxer become undisputed.
by his last hurrah, I'm thinking, you know, right now, if Tyson Fury stays just at this level that he's at now, I think Tyson Fury is not only the biggest, but he's probably the best boxer out there as far as his footwork. Scully, what do you think? If Tyson Fury stays focused, do you see, unless, you know, we get into the different strips and things like that and the different politics of boxing, but just as far as pure talent, do you think that Tyson Fury should be the best for at least the next 3 to 5 years?
I mean, that would be the general consensus. I think it's pretty clear when he's on his game, you know, when he's right and he's there and he's prime condition and the whole nine, he's very, very hard to beat. He's got so many intangibles that are positive. Again, I always say, and my only reservations even going into the Wilder fight was you don't know which guy is going to show up. I mean, the fact is he went through a period there where he went through some mental issues and, you know, you never know. You never know what he's doing right now, you know, during this layoff. Who knows what's going on? So, but if he's at his best mentally and physically, I don't see anybody today that could beat him.
And Professor, this is kind of what I was talking about, because if Fury beats Wilder 3 times, even if Wilder were to be, I think, the number one contender, I'm kind of like you there. There would be something that would go on there with that fight. There would be somebody else, maybe a young bucker or, you know, that might come up there and come in between. But after seeing 3 Deontay Wilder Fury fights, and then at least 2 Fury Joshua fights, what's your thoughts on Fury and his physical condition and the way he looked? Like we all know, I mean, you know, he might come in, you know, all the way off his rocker, who knows? But if he stays focused, do you see anybody beating Fury in the next 3 to 5 years?
Nah, that'll be real tough. I mean, it'll be a couple of challenges, but I don't know. I haven't seen anybody that would beat him. Give him a good run, yeah, but beat him, that'll be hard. I mean, now, especially that he has this new sound of confidence, you know, going to the Crump Gym, and now he's able to sit on his punches. So, as an opponent, you don't know what Fury going to show up in the ring. You don't know if he going to sit there and box and dance around you, or is he going to sit there on his punches and come at you. So, I mean, he's a tough puzzle to crack, man. He's like the heavyweight Mayweather, for real.
Scully, you know, LeBron had, I mean, he had a very good point there. It's kind of like Tyson's returning back to his roots because Tyson and Dante both trained at Emmanuel Stewart at the Crump Gym. I think we talked about it before, where Emmanuel had predicted that they would be number one and number two. So do you think, that getting back, you know, with somebody that he's familiar with and that he knows his record, from the Crystal and he knows his pedigree from Emmanuel. So, Scalia, what do you think? Does that make a difference, or do you think, will that make a difference being back in familiar surroundings?
I mean, I believe it would. I mean, anytime you can, you know, a trainer is very important. I mean, some people, you know, seem to think like they're just there to give you water, you know, and tell you to throw a jab. But I mean, the right connection with a guy is vital. And if you have it, you know, there's been cases where two guys, a trainer and a fighter, were made for each other. And if they can, you know, get that kind of gel together, they can do things that maybe the fighter wouldn't do under another trainer. So, I see it as being very positive for him. That's my feeling just on the outside looking in. I feel like it's very positive for him.
Scully, what makes Sugar Hill seem to be so successful at training these guys at the heavyweight class? I mean, you know, first Klitschko, now Fury. and a few others in between. But that heavyweight class, he seems to have a knack. Does that come from his background with Emmanuel and Emmanuel's great work with heavyweights?
I would say obviously the influence is obviously there. You know, he has a very good pedigree. But you have to keep in mind he's got two thoroughbreds. You know, it's like we didn't give him a go kart to ride the Indy 500 in. You know, we gave him Lamborghinis. You know what I mean? So he's got good cars to drive. And he's working well with them, and obviously they appreciate him, and they have faith in him. So it seems like they've found a mix, you know, that's worked well. Now, granted, that's until, you know, with trainers and boxers, everything's great until it's not great anymore. You know, then you lose, and then all of a sudden the fingers get pointed, and you know. But so far so good. That's what I can say about that particular situation.
What do you think, Professor?
Hey, I think it was a good jail. I think, you know, like Scully said, I mean, he had good fighters to train, and both of them gelling. It's just like in football where you got Brady and Belichick. You know what I'm saying? Like, Belichick, you know, he's a good coach, but when you got Brady as your quarterback, it makes your job a lot easier. And then the same thing for Brady, it makes his job a lot easier having a coach like Belichick. So, I mean, I think that both sides really gel together. It's a good situation. And if they can stick together and not let the politics and the money and fame get in the way of, you know, that common goal of just being great, hey, it'll be a great storybook ending.
Scully, have you heard anything about the resumption of amateur boxing? Seems like we lost Scully there for a minute. Jabron, have you heard anything about amateur boxing or any returns of amateur boxing?
No, I haven't. I haven't looked into any of the amateur boxing. That's whatever the mainstream has given us in this last week and a half or so. You know, I've been following a little bit of the news and notes here and there, but as far as, you know, actual fighting, nah, you know, haven't been fortunate, even though there have been some fights overseas in Mexico and different countries, haven't been able to see them.
Yeah, that's I saw the one fight, I believe, in Nicaragua or somewhere it was, and they were trying to do social distancing and that. Jabron, you know, with so many different parts of the country opening up, and, you know, we are seeing boxing without an audience in Vegas, with also talking about, doing UFC in the island and in Florida. Do you feel safe to get on an airplane right now to go to another city to participate in, I mean, you know, because people are talking to some people, not everyone, just talk about, you know, like, hey, it's safe to go in the crowd, you know, just make sure you have on a mask, and, you know, we can go back to 20 and 30,000 in, you know, an arena. But, you know, if you don't live in that city, you're talking about air travel. Do you have any concerns?
What's one is? I'm on the fence. I'm on the fence with this one. I feel it's 50-50 with me, you know. is, you know, me personally, I mean, I'm not thinking about going to no game or that like that. I'll watch it on television. I'll definitely watch it on television. But, you know, right now with everything, you know, I'm trying to take care of business and, you know, put food on the table and provide for my family and keep the roof over my head right now. I'm not trying to be traveling and going places right now. So I think to the people that want to go, if they want to go, that's on them. You know, they're willing to take that risk. You know, I'm not here to judge. So if people want to go right ahead. That means, you know, we'll get more ratings and they'll get more revenue at the gate and they'll keep the, you know, above water.
Here's the thing that I'm kind of, I guess, afraid of. Because boxing has always been an event that you celebrated, or, you know, when you get to good fights, especially probably what we're going to have to see now, because people are going to be a little more tight with those change purses now. Boxing to me is kind of a blue collar sport, even though it depends upon sponsorships and things like that. It's always dependent upon the support of the little guys. So, are you afraid that fans, if this persists, because as you said, you know, like some people are expecting a spike in this virus. So you're talking about probably people being more skeptical about traveling. Are you afraid that this will become a remote sport? By that, I mean, maybe we won't see crowds back anymore. Maybe everything will be done streaming or on a closed circuit or as we see, maybe just simply without crowds. What's your thoughts when especially the undercard guys depend upon that revenue usually for them to get paid?
Yeah. I think a lot of, like you said, the little guy is going to suffer for a while before the people at the top start to suffer, and then that's when change will happen. Then you'll see them open up to the public and start allowing crowds, because when it affects that bottom line, that bottom dollar, you know, it goes to any extreme.
Yeah, well, speaking about people that have been through extremes, my brother here, my airborne brother, Mr. Boyd Nelson. Boyd, how you doing tonight?
I'm well. I got to see protesting in Manhattan today, and they were not of color, and it got me really emotional. Almost started crying, and I'm having a hard time with what just happened in Atlanta, like I'm sure many of us are. And it reminded me, I had a buddy of mine who's since 5 years old, and he was NYPD, now he's FDNY, he's Caucasian, and he got stuck on with George Floyd saying, you know, what would you do if somebody put a gun to your wife's stomach when she was carrying your baby? And I said, in the moment, I would try to kill them if they were going to kill them, but that doesn't mean that after that, we live in a Gestapo society where at any point you can arbitrarily kill somebody for a crime they did in their past that they served their time for. It's separate. And that's a hard one for people to grasp. It's separate. And that's the big one there. You can't just shoot somebody down for something they did in their past and say it's all right, no matter how egregious it was. That's what we have law and order for. So it's very real in people's minds. It's hard for them to separate the vision of our country versus how they feel emotionally themselves and fear something. Imagine what if it was their life. So
we're definitely going through some things emotionally, but in the meantime, you've been through some things, and you are definitely the first person that I've had on the show that has actually came down with COVID-19. And you spent a lot of time on Facebook telling us about the experience, and all of this time you were still trying to take care of your parents, which made it doubly emotional on you. But tell us about your experience with the COVID-19.
When the symptoms came on, it all happened within about 20 seconds, maybe even less. I felt instantly when it came on, I started feeling my upper torso was sensitive, as if you're about to get a fever. My neck ached a little bit. Well, that's part of the upper torso. And from the left aspect of the back of my neck, going up and over my head to my left eyeball, I felt a lot of pressure just came on. My left sinus, the nerve inside there, deep up, like almost by the eyeball, became super sensitive. So I felt like when I was breathing in, I was feeling it close to my eye. It made it feel like the cavity expanded, my nasal canal. And I felt a little sore throat coming. It felt like I was about to get a bad fever, like the flu, the next day. And I felt lethargic. I got really slow. And I looked at my mother with this. I had just got her home from the hospital. And then it happened to me right when I was with her in her apartment. And I turned to her with a little smirk on my face. And I said, "Mama, I think something is happening to me." And then from that point on, I would exercise every day, and I'd feel horrible after the exercise. I was like, "Oh, I'm about to get real sick." And then the next morning, I'd be fine. And then it was the day I found out that I was positive that the cough started. And that cough was almost like, let's say your sternum is a zipper, and instead of being all the way open, it was zipped up about an inch. So whenever I breathe in and it would try to get too deep, it would trigger it, and then the dry cough would start. And then the ache started. Everywhere I had ribs ached. So it was just pain. I didn't have any fever. I didn't have any trouble breathing. But if I were to try to start exercising and taking deep breaths, coughing fits would start. And that ache and the ache but the moment I would roll over on my side, it would go away within about 3 seconds. That, at least on the part that I wasn't laying on anymore, because the majority of your lungs are in your back. So that's what they didn't realize when this first happened. And I understood, especially by the second day, why people were dying from this, because in our country, when you're sick, they tell you don't do anything and rest and until you get better. And this thing makes you not want to move. And when that happens, you think, let me keep not moving and I'll get better. But actually, you keep feeling worse. So you keep saying, but then it's better stay here. Eventually, I'll feel better. But eventually, you just don't move. You die. So I kept that in mind. And I was happy. I asked this thing out loud to come, because when I took my mother to the ER and she was suffering, she tried to beat it for 11 days out of her own place. And so she said, "I don't think I'm going to make it if I don't get medical help." And I was kissing her all over her face when we were waiting in the ER. And I remember saying, "Come try me, ma'am. Not all people are the same. And you're novel. That means you're brand new. This is rookie season. And I'm fitting to send you into retirement. It's not going to be easy. Come try someone who fights back." So it came on. And that's why I had that little smirk when I looked at my mother, because I was like, it's time to compete. And the best part of it was I was competing against myself. I had full control if I wanted to keep exercising or not. So I promised myself, because God gave me my lungs. He didn't make my lungs for my virus. I planned on keeping them. So I shadow boxed for 25 to 40 minutes every day and moving like a zombie sometimes, but kept the puns going. I put on some hip-hop, and once the cough start, cough it on out, and the moment it went away, back into throwing punches, and did that every day until I got better. But I promised myself I would not cooperate. I plan on being very defiant and showing why not all humans are the same. And I wanted this
virus to know that it's probably going to get fired. Its boss won't be too happy because it's doing a bad job, and maybe it should pick up basket weaving. That's
now, you were in New York, right?
I'm still in New York, yeah. You got it, Airborne.
So what took you so long to get tested? Was it voluntary? Was it not available to you? What took you so long?
I didn't wait long to get tested. As soon as they started offering tests, I didn't have any symptoms, so they didn't have an antibody test, so they weren't testing you at first unless you had symptoms or unless you had been exposed to someone. This was back in March, end of March, so it was early on. And then my father found a place for us to go, but I knew I had to have got tested because I was kissing my mama on her face after she had been diagnosed with it. So I went to go get tested. It took about 4 days, and they said I got it. But the tests were not readily available like they are now, if they are now. This was earlier on in the game.
Debron,
I you can say what you want, if it was stupid or not. I had hoped I had it already and I was asymptomatic. And if that wasn't the case, I hoped to get sick so I can beat this and have antibodies. And it happened, and I'm happy, and the process happened, and it was something I got to compete against myself to save my life, which was great. And my breathing was never messed up. I mean, I didn't have trouble taking down oxygen. It was just discomfort. It was a lot of discomfort in my torso. That was the worst. And a cough's a cough, whatever. I got past that. But the torso pain, but had I cooperated with it, I think it would have ended a lot worse. So that,
LeBron, do you want to ask Floyd some questions about going through the coronavirus?
Nah, I mean, I'm happy that he had that mentality. That's the mentality that I have. I don't, I don't have it that I know of. I don't have any symptoms. I feel great. And I think that's a great thing. I know someone close to me who's been diagnosed with it, and they fought it, and they're back at work and doing, their thing as of, that. It's just like a normal flu. It's just about how you go about it. If you one of those people that just gonna lay in the house and do nothing,
yep,
that's on you.
You're right, brother. This is my philosophy. If you're moving, you can't be dead. It's impossible to be dead if you're moving. You could die while you're moving, but you're not dead. So as long as I keep moving, I knew I wasn't dead. And that's what the philosophy I took. And that's what I tell everybody. Just move. Don't stop moving. When my mama got home from the hospital, the moment she got home, she started doing laps, walking around the kitchen, the living room, the dining room with her head down like a zombie and weak because they sent her home. She was good enough to fight it off for the rest at home, but she was super weak. And my mama's an Army veteran, and as she's walking around in circles, and she's, immigrant Holocaust survivor parents, and she just kept mumbling to herself, can't stop moving, can't stop moving, like coaching herself through it. And then my daddy got it also with his Parkinson's and congestive heart failure. He got that drug remdesivir that they said we're going to run out of within a month, and it was experimental at that time. And his blood oxygen saturation went from 79% to 97% in 6 hours after getting that, which must have saved his life. So like you said, LeBron, just don't stop moving. That's the truth. We have so much power within our ability, and being scared does not help anybody. It actually makes your immune system worse. I took that shit out. Fighters fight, right? Fighters fight. Look, do you think I'm going to sit back so I could die? And I had all these people on Instagram, boy, you should take it easy. You take it easy. I don't want to die.
Yeah. I'm with you. Boyd, have you had a chance to see any of fights, since we've come back? I mean,
I sure have. I heard Stevenson whoop dude, old boy, pretty good.
Yeah,
but I hadn't seen any other ones.
So, things going as far as the Angels over Israel?
And gloves and doves. Now that's shot down right now because there's nobody moving. They're supposed to be competing in our Gleason's in October if that still goes on here in Brooklyn, and then Albania in November. I have something much bigger that came about. I got invited to be on a Zoom call on Tuesday, one of 250 people, and I'm friends with the person that put it together, so I'm helping get more of the VIP guests to be on it. I'm going to blow your mind right now when I tell you who's going to be on it. But before I say that, the purpose of the call is proactively, how can we use veterans to improve relations between cops and people of color in our country? The people we have on this call, ready for this? George Floyd's family, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s family, Jackie Robinson's family, Jim Brown, a couple of generals. I got off the phone with Charlemagne today. He's going to let me know tomorrow if he's going to be able to co-host it with Al Roker. Spoke to Demetrius Andre because he wants athletes. And, boo-boo. He said he's down. I text Roy Jones about this last week, but I didn't know I could invite him. And he said, absolutely tell him how it went after. So now I'm asking him to be on. And so I left him a message and texted him. And now my boy, he's best friends with B-Hop, sent a message to him to ask him if he wants to be on. So I'm waiting for that to come back. They want as many athletes as possible and people of different colors on. So they're trying to get Drew Brees on too, but they're having a hard time getting a hold of him. And that's going down Tuesday at 5 p.m. That's a big thing. I can't, the names that are on this call, I asked my brother to set it up. How the F did you set this up? But he did. And it's not about any movements we're going to be discussing. It's about us creating our own movement using veterans to close that gap. And that's what we're going to be brainstorming about.
Jabron, I want to ask you here because boxing is probably has more nationalities, and especially men and women of color, than probably any other individual sport. So, Jabron, what about, Boyd's talking about military, veterans and whatnot, but what about the boxing community itself? Do you think that, possibly we should do something, because like I said, we do represent a great deal of people of many colors and creeds.
Well, most definitely boxing could make a stance in some type of movement in the situation because majority of boxers come from those communities. They're not fed with silver spoon, so they can relate to a lot of the topics and agendas that we would want to push to try to bring the community together. And it's tough when you have these billionaires making decisions for people that they don't know nothing about, They don't come from that type of environment, The people need to be making decisions about their environment, not somebody who can't relate. So I think definitely the boxing community can make some type of statement.
Boyd, ever since we've known each other, you've been involved in some type of movement that has something to do with human relations. Do you think that boxing has done its share, or do you think boxing could do more?
I think boxing organically has done its share because anyone who steps into a boxing gym and just goes to work out there long enough changes because they get exposed. And all you need to do is be exposed to it, I believe. I think the biggest challenge is because you don't ever step in the community, it's almost like when people up in here in New York have a problem with immigrants taking their jobs. Say, how many Mexicans are taking your jobs up here in New York? But you have all this anger towards them. You don't even know anybody. And it's the same here with this. You have all these issues, and perceptions about people of color, and you don't have one person in your life who's of color who you go over to their house. So what are you talking about? You go to the boxing gym long enough, if you want to, so they don't know how to communicate with them. That's what it is. So they have the whole perceived notions of them. It's like, if you see a brother walking on the street, you'll tag everything on him. But then if he go puts on his military uniform, all of a sudden your whole perception changes. But it's the same dude. But you assigned all this to him just based off the color and your own fear, so you have to judge. Because you need to think you're safe and think you know how to act, regardless of how you're judging him is accurate or not. At least you believe you know how to act. And that's how it is. So you got everybody who've never actually met somebody or gone into their homes or see how they interact saying this is how they are, how they interact, what their home life is like. You go to that boxing gym long enough, if you want to learn how to interact with other cultures, and if you want to learn how they interact with each other, and if you want to learn how they interact with you, go to a boxing gym. That is the best at which every white person in this country could go to a boxing gym and just start going through there routinely so they could be exposed. Because it only takes knowing one person and caring about one person and learning about their life that looks like a certain color that's not yours that erases the idea of every single one of them have to be like this. But we're also afraid as a species to want to go and connect, because once we do, we develop compassion. And once we develop compassion, we develop empathy. And then all of a sudden, we don't have an enemy anymore. And as humans, we always have to assign an enemy. That's what our president does, assigns an enemy. So it takes the onus off what are we doing that's responsible for why we are where we are right now. But if you have an enemy, it's their fault. It's easy. It's basic, like psych 101. If you give someone else the blame, it takes it off of you. So we don't want to be compassionate because we're afraid we're going to stop. It's going to take down our defense, and we'll realize actually they're good people. We've been hating them for no reason. I also believe, and this is from growing up with a daddy who he caught, you see my complexion. You saw my, he's my same complexion, but his parents were both Beyonce's complexion, Louisiana Creole. So he grew up in Compton and Watts in the 50s and 60s being called white boy this, and he knows he's black, and he had a whole big complex. He grew up fighting all the time, defending his blackness, all the time. So he's got a hard time with this, and I believe you grow up in this United States black. I don't care if you grow up in Bel Air. You have a form of PTSD towards cops. If you grow up in Bel Air, you're going to see it on the news every time and hear it. And if you say, well, so what if you're seeing it? You ever seen the movie Clockwork Orange? Just see it enough, and it messes with you. Just see it. You don't have to experience it. Even like in the first person, just see it. And that's our whole country. And I believe a lot of times what happens when someone gets pulled over of color, their PTSD flares up. Why? They probably learned if they get arrested, they're going to go in front of people that don't look like them judging them. They're going to be assigned someone that doesn't look like them, and a bail is going to be set so high, the person that doesn't look like them assigned to them is going to say, take the plea bargain, because if you go to court, you're going to get slammed. Take the plea bargain, put you in jail. Now you're in the system. Now the spiral starts and the cycle. Once you get out, it's on your record. You can't get a job. Now you actually have to commit a crime because you got to live. But you're not a bad person, but you got to live. Anybody would do that to live. So that's what flares up, I believe. And I think that, you know, if we saw a veteran flip out on a cop and they said, you know, he was diagnosed with PTSD, white America will look at it much more compassionate because we understand PTSD for veterans. PTSD is not something you only get if you have camouflage on. Doesn't matter what clothes you're wearing. If you live long enough and experience life deep enough, you get traumatized by shit. So I think if we recognize that's what's happening there, they've been conditioned. Along with that, you know, if you have a bad day once, it can fuck up your whole week. One bad day, right? And we've already shown that enough trauma can recircuit your brain. It actually changes your DNA. It's proven. White person does not get on a Facebook, you know, is not invited on a Facebook group chat, their whole week's messed up. What do you think 400 years did to a human and their DNA? And then that human DNA got changed, and then they had babies born with that changed DNA from being exposed to trauma, the worst of trauma, the most violent and vicious. The worst. What do you think 400 years did to the human brain? They don't want to accept that. You look around this damn world. every country deemed third world right now was colonized by some European nation. They jacked them up, and then when they gave them their freedom, they just left. They pulled on out, left it like it was. Now they're third world. Who caused that? And it's everywhere. It's so frustrating. All right, I'm off my box.
Jabron, you want to ask a question before we start talking a little bit about the combat?
Man, he hit it on the head for me. I can't say any more. Those are all points that I would be definitely touching on.
Thank you, Jabron. I appreciate it, brother. And, you know, I could see people of color saying, fuck you, I don't have PTSD. No, it's not. Everybody alive has PTSD towards something if you just live long enough. But do you think that feeling you get when you see cops, that tingle you get, that's not something happening inside your brain? Just that alone. I know what that's like. Not from cops, but from other things. My PTSD flares up when I see people judging people or looking at people who have disabilities funny, because I had a girlfriend who was a quadriplegic for 6 years. So now I always watch how people look at people with disabilities, and the moment they may make a little ucky face, I want to give them a disability, but I don't. We all have it.
Now,
you're exposed to enough trauma.
I'm going to ask both of you guys a question here because I'm going to kind of relate an experience. When I was 20 years old, just before I went to Vietnam, in fact, about 5 months before I went to Vietnam, they had the riots in Detroit, and they sent the 101st up there because the crowd had taken the weapons from the National Guard, machine guns to be exact. So they sent us up there to get the machines in. But anyway, I'm a 20-year-old black man. I'm walking around. I'm guarding the perimeter of a GM plant. The rest of us are scattered about the different resources in Detroit. And basically, even though we were regular Army troops, they told us to let the black neighborhood burn. Now, this was in 1967. In 2020, I'm watching Atlanta, I'm watching L.A., I'm watching New York. They're still burning. Maybe you guys can explain to me what the damn progress is that I've made, because I don't see it. I do not see it. Maybe I'm just an old black pessimist, but, you know, hey, the same riots that we were having in 1967, we're having in 2020. The only difference is that in 1967, we burned down our own neighborhoods. In 2020, we went downtown. We went to Manhattan. We went to Macy's. We went down to Gucci's here in L.A. So, was it the change in tactics that all of a sudden got us noticed? Or was it actually the injustice, you know, as you point out, boy, you know, I don't even have to tell you, 400 years, you know, and to me, it looks like it's going to go on another 400 years. Because as soon as the talk dies down, all of a sudden the inaction takes back up. So, as two young men, am I on the right track here, or am I just, you know, not giving the young people a chance?
Jabron, you want to take that first?
I'll take it first. Me personally, I just think it's more of a cycle, because you see, like, going back to the 20s with the Black Wall Street, right? It's like, once black people started to come to migrate to that part of the country, build their own empire, it was like they wanted to destroy it, right? Now, fast forward to now, you're seeing more minority billionaires, millionaires than ever, right? And it seems like now they're getting generational wealth. They're not just getting money. Now you're seeing the sons or the daughters taking over empires, and I feel like You know, they're like, hold up. People are getting too much power. But the problem is in this day and age, now more people are able to actually see, like Board was saying, they are actually able to see with social media, see things that are actually going on, opposed to before, back in the days where, you know, it was word of mouth. It took a long time for a lot of things to get around. You know, there wasn't no cell phones and TV and, you know, in the earlier times. So now you can't just grasp and put a muzzle on the nation or these countries now the way you did before. People are taking a stance and they have a voice now. They feel that they have power. So I think the cycle can come to an end. I don't see it right now, but I see change is going to come.
I agree with you, brother, and this is why I'm most hopeful that it's going to come. Why I understand why this time was different with the reaction. We had no distractions. Two parts. We had no distractions, and we've been in the womb for the last 2 to 3 months. When I say the womb, either your nuclear family you grew up with or the one you created, the ones you love most pure and love the most. So we've been the best version of ourselves now for some time. And you're in the household every day, day in, day out, surrounded by the babies you made or the parents that made you. And it's the most loving space. And yet, hate keeps finding its way in the house through TV and social media. So before COVID, it'd be on TV, but you're going out to dinner. So it's not my problem, and you get distracted, or you got a meeting to go to. It's kind of like why immigration doesn't matter now, because no one's coming over here. So what happens now is when you're surrounded by the purest love that love exists in, your babies you made or your parents that made you, and your siblings, day in and day out with zero distractions for months and months, and then you turn on your TV and this hate finds its way into your house when your room is full of love. And guess what? You're stuck in your house after, and there's no way to get it out of your mind. You have no distractions. Like, oh, I got to go to this meeting, though, so it's all right. You're stuck, and then you look at your babies, and you're forced to think about the rest of this country and when they're going to grow up in the future. And what are you going to talk about? There's nothing new going on in our days. So what you see on there, and what I believe is we just got tired of seeing hate. Hate. We're saturated with so much love. We got COVID killing everybody, and this shit's still happening? Like, we're all fighting to stay alive, but this is still happening, and we're seeing it. That is why this was different, I believe. Because we all have a common enemy. We all got equalized. This virus doesn't care. We all got equalized, but then you still have humans reminding others who's subservient to the others. When you got a thing like The Walking Dead, what I loved about the show The Walking Dead, what that represented to me was the inevitability of what's going to come. It doesn't choose which one over another. It just comes at you if you get close enough. So every human alive knew that there was that constant that could pick any one of them off without us segregating who they were going to pick off. And that's what happened here with this COVID, which made everyone equal. But then you're still having humans kill humans? When we're all trying to fight against the same enemy? I think that was the difference. I know that was the difference. While being surrounded by the purest love we have for the last 3 months. That's why there was a difference, because we finally got to see the hate for what it is with zero distractions while looking at our children. Think about that concept, being around your babies day in and day out with nothing else to do, knowing that they're inheriting this world and seeing this shit while we're all trying to fight against the same enemy, COVID. That was why the perfect storm. COVID set up the perfect scenario for every American to finally be touched. For good or bad, and the majority of them have been good. That's what I believe.
Well, I certainly hope that light.
You get enough light-skinned people on part of anything, things happen, right? Look how fast they're talking about clinical trials to find a vaccine. They say vaccines take 7-8 years. You get enough light-skinned people with enough money that get affected, all of a sudden, a year and a half or a year, we're going to have a cure. How'd that happen? I thought it takes 7-8 years. Well, you get the right people. Those are all artificial, those timelines. It's all about who.
It's all about who, what, and where. As I said, man, I always appreciate you coming on. I've wanted to get you on as a COVID-19 survivor, man. You are the first.
That virus exposed the other virus. And when I said I saw people marching, I said, around the world, it looks like we decided, we chose as humans which virus we realized was more deadly.
Yeah, I was very surprised at that. I'm hoping that we don't have to pay for it in numbers later on. But, hey, man.
Another thing and about the COVID before you get me on. This is an important factor. I know why they don't harp on this, because they want this control because of the fear that it could get worse and Americans would take this. If you don't keep them deadly afraid of a re-outbreak, then we're going to go out and take liberties. With what we have learned with best practices, don't put them on ventilators. Don't leave them on their back. There's drug remdesivir. Keep them moving. If COVID just started right now with the same strand, we would not have had the same result because we've learned. But whenever they talk about the strand reemerging, they haven't said in people's minds it's going to be exactly like it was before. It can't be. We know how to deal with it different now. But I understand why they won't say that, because they don't want people to take advantage of the idea of that. But I know that. I also know in Korea, they discovered they're doing whole blood testing, serology testing, whole blood, and they're finding that people they thought were reinfected, they're now suspecting that it was actually a strand of RNA left in their body, and it's innocuous, means it's harmless. And if it does try to start moving around, we have antibodies to recognize it. And they're saying that they put amplifiers in the nose swab to try to pick things up. They're picking up this RNA sequence, and they're thinking that people have been reinfected. In Wuhan, in March, people were being, they thought, reinfected, but they were saying they were all asymptomatic. It makes sense they were all asymptomatic because they were never reinfected. They beat it, and they picked up an RNA strand, so it's coming up as they're pissing hot, but they're not. They never got sick again. So they're investigating that.
I'm glad you said that, because now does that mean because you have antibodies that you can pass it on to someone else?
Well, you have to be sick with it to pass it on, right? If you're not antibodies doesn't mean you're infected with it. Antibodies means you overcame it. Here, antibodies. It's ridiculous. Antibody. This word antibody, majority of people have never heard of. It's an everyday. It's not something magical. And if you don't have it, when you get a cold, as you get better, it's because you have antibodies. For every little thing you've ever had, if you didn't have antibodies, you would have died. It's like gravity. It's a constant. It's an inverse report. So I remember when I went to go get tested to see if I was still positive for COVID, and I was an antibody test came out, and I went in, and I was with the nurse at first, and she was like, "What are you here for?" I said, "I had COVID. It's been a few weeks. I quarantined. I'm feeling better. I want to make sure I'm not still contagious." And she said, "Well, you know, we have antibody tests. You want that?" And I was kind. I said, "No, I don't want that, because if I didn't have antibodies, I'd be dead. So I have them. I need to make sure I don't still have COVID, so I can't pass it off. So I'm not contagious, because I want to make sure I'm not contagious." She goes, "Makes sense." Then the nurse practitioner comes in a few minutes later. Now, she's a lot more educated on this. She asked me, "What do you hear?" I say the same thing. And then she said to me, "Well, why don't you get the antibody test then?" And I looked at her, and I got a little more sharp, because I was very disappointed in her. I said, "Why would I want to get tested for something that I have to have or I would be dead? I don't need to test for something that I have to have. I need to make sure I also don't still have COVID so I can't infect somebody else. Makes sense?" And she said, "You know, you're right." And I'm thinking to myself, what if I would have said, "Yes, give me the antibody test." And great, they would have shown I have to have them. I have to, factually, like gravity exists. I have to. It's a seesaw. As it goes down, the antibodies go up. But what if I still had COVID? So I take the antibody test, you show me I still have it, I go out and I infect somebody because I think, oh, I have antibodies, I must be good. It has nothing to do with if you still have COVID or not. Tracking me?
Airborne? Makes sense. But, you know, like I said, you went through it, so I have to ask you. So,
hey. Yeah, no, you have antibodies. This isn't a magic thing, antibodies. It's like we have antibodies for everything. Every time we've ever gotten sick throughout our life, like when they give us the flu shot, it's so we can develop antibodies to that strain. That's why they give a weak form of it. That's all it is. It's not this magic thing. Like I've heard people say, you know, did you get your antibody test? I was like, no, I had COVID and I beat it. Yeah, but did you get your test? I would be dead if I don't have them. Do you understand this? You don't understand. And you know what reminds me of this saying? Determination without understanding can be very dangerous. Don't just use shit you don't understand. Say words and then judge other people by it and invoke hate. Oh, but you're going to get me sick. Nah, because you're not. I don't know if you still have. I don't know. You didn't get your antibody test. I had COVID, and now I'm healthy. That means I have antibodies. Like if I hold something and drop it, it has to go down to the ground. That's all it is. But they've never heard of antibodies, and they're ignorant. So I got to get the test. I got to get the test. You don't need to have the antibody test if you know if you were symptomatic of COVID and you're still alive. The only reason you're still alive is because you have antibodies.
Hey, I understand perfectly. But thank you so much, man, for coming on. And, I'll grab you up again, probably.
Always, baby. I'm here, boy. You let me know.
Hey.
Javon, I love hearing your mind, brother. Thank you for what you shared.
Appreciate you, man.
Of course. And I know I got pretty hot during this when we were just talking.
Oh, man.
It's harder.
JK can tell you. JK can tell you, boy, I get heated up too. he got to cool me down.
Oh, it's all good, baby. Hey, Airborne, you remember that the movie Round One I told you about? All right. I think within a month, we're going to have some pretty serious news, and I'll let you know.
All right. Well, hey, I know that. I know they start filming out here in Hollywood. I think it was this week. So I know some of the film industry is getting back on its feet. So, yeah. Don't forget to get in touch with me, man.
You know it, brother. Of course. I've got to have something newsworthy for you.
Airborne all the way, my man. You have a great night.
Same to the both of you, brothers. Thank you all for your time.
All right. Thank you, bro.
All right, now. All right. Talk soon.
Jabron, man, look, it's been a while. Boxing is back. Hey, we had four bouts. Three days next week. Am I correct? Tuesday,
yeah,
Thursday.
I think they're supposed to have one on Saturday.
We had Diego Magdaleno on the show a couple of weeks ago with K-9. What did you think about Diego's performance yesterday? Well, Thursday.
Unfortunately, I didn't get to catch that fight. I didn't get to catch it. You said Diego?
Diego, man, of Magdaleno. Jesse, we had Diego on. His brother Jesse fought Thursday. Yeah. But,
He did fight Thursday? I thought that fight had got rescheduled.
No. He did fight. He got the victory. It ended up being a disqualification, but yeah, he did get the victory. Getting back to the rest of the boxing season, I guess. Now everybody's talking about fights that are going to be coming up and whatnot. But, for someone that trains in the gym, like Gleason's, where you get to see from time to time some top-ranked talent, isn't this more like watching a sparring match, and as a true fan, I mean, as a diehard fan of boxing, do you think that this is a better experience than when you have? I'm talking about your experience, not necessarily the fighters or anything like that, but your experience as a diehard fan. Do you think that now we get treated to some of the finer points of boxing, and you know, you're not as distracted by yourself, the crowd, the oohs and ahs of the crowd, or you know, still thinking about the third round? What did this do? Did he really wear that into the ring? Or I mean, what do you think?
I think, I mean, it wasn't bad, you know, actually, because when I watched the Shakur card, they had the commentary, even though they, you know, wasn't there live, they was remotely, you know, Tim Bradley and, forgot the other guy, Tim Bradley, Ward wasn't up there because, Andre Ward wasn't up there. It was Mark Kringle or something like that, and one other guy. But it was good commentary. They were you know, commentating the fight, and it was just straight to the point. You know, it wasn't like you said. You know, how they'll be panning in the crowd and saying, "Well, this celebrity here and this and that," and you know, talking about different things. Different fighters might be in the crowd. It was just straight to the action. So I did like that part, you know, that I like to get to the meat and potatoes anyway.
Are you looking for, what are you expecting from this boxing season? Do you think that now that we're just getting back into, I guess, what we want to call the groove of boxing, do you think that now we're going to be forced to see more of the best fighting the best? Because you know, as I said, you know, that undercard money might not be available no more.
I think they'll still have some undercards. It won't be as much as it was before. But they'll have some undercard as far as the competition. I think definitely people are going to be a little more anxious to get in line with these titles and these champions because, you know, like you said, the money ain't going to be there as much. So you want to try to get to the top of the mountain as fast as you can. And then a lot of these guys are getting older in the sport also. You know, it's time for the torch to be passed. So definitely you're going to see some guys on the fast track, like Scully God, better be it. You know, he's what, 35, 36? You know, he's getting up there. You know, he only got a couple of more years around. Because after 40 at that division, I don't think you want to be in there with those young lions. But I think boxing is about to heat up. You know, we got a couple of potential fights. Bob Arum spoke about Big Baby Miller versus possibly Carlos Takam. I think that'll be a good fight. Takam is a durable opponent, a good comeback fight for Big Baby, and also Sergio Dervinchenko has a lot of options right now. You got Canelo saying that he could possibly be an opponent for him in September, and you also have possible a rematch with Triple G. Dervinchenko said he'll definitely fight Triple G in a rematch or fight Charlo for his belt. You know, he has a lot of options, you know. So boxing is definitely about to get back rolling. And also some news and notes. We've seen the young lady get her WBC belt back due to Miss Hernandez failed drug test. The B sample came back positive, so she regained her WBC title. Did you hear about that, JK?
No, I hadn't heard about that one.
Yeah. Yep. The young lady received her belt back. I'm drawing a blank right now of her name.
You talking about Deserne?
Yeah, she has her belt back. The WBC belt back. They gave it back to her. Her opponent, the sample came back positive also. So she's still the WBC champ. You know, she can't wait to get back in the ring. She's a great fighter, very ambitious, and I can't wait to see what her next challenge is.
Yeah, we've had a few women on. We had Jackie Callan on, Terry Fox. They came on the show. As a matter of fact, Terry, I think, is the one that handles Jesse. And that's how we got him on the show, because I want to get Jesse and Diego on the show together. But Jamal Herring has a bout coming up. I'm kind of like you, I forget who it is now, but weren't who were they talking about possibly moving up? That wasn't Herring. I said, we're talking about somebody moving up in weight. I'm not sure. Was that Jamal Herring or was that someone else? I know he's supposed to fight on the 2nd of July. But there was talk about one of them. There was somebody talking about moving up to, I think, 140 or 147.
I'm not sure.
Let's see, Mr. Brad Check is back on July 7th.
What's going on with Team Certified?
Well, Team Certified, as of now, we're supposed to be in Sturgis August 8th. They moved us back from that weekend to Tuesday. And we're supposed to have the whole gambit of the week. There's supposed to be some surprises that we haven't quite got ironed out. But Ernie and Callie went up to, they flew up to Sturgis last week, looked over the venue and whatnot. We don't know what might be happening now with these new outbreaks. South Dakota might have a green light. Depends on, if you're a guy like me, you're talking about four airplanes. Two of them I can jump out of, but that's another story.
Shout out to the champ, Layman Brewster, for his birthday this past week. So happy and blessed that he got to see another birthday and his son got, moving on up. So he had a great week.
Yeah, his son graduated, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think his son graduated because he once again, we have a father, having to give his son the talk. And he spoke of that on Facebook. Jabron, as a father, we kind of, I asked you, it's been 1967, and I don't see, Layman's giving his brother, his son, the same talk that my father gave me. I think it was Friday night, we found a brother that they say committed suicide hanging from a tree in Santa Barbara. Javon, do you really think that you can grow up without having to give your kids the talk?
No. Nope. And they say he committed suicide.
Yeah.
But
they
that's what actually happened.
I mean, what did he do? He thought he was a Christmas tree ornament? I mean, come on now. I mean, maybe it's just me. Like I said, I'm kind of skeptical, but, you know.
Brother
24 years old. Yeah. Maybe he didn't feel that bad. But, you know, I mean, you going to pick a public tree? Like I said, anyway, I don't know. I mean, because at one time people said that sports were a great equalizer, and it seems that that's true when the majority of players are the other hue. Take baseball, for instance. But in every sport where people of color dominate, I can't say that. I mean, like you said, you feel that you're still going to have to give your children the talk. So what would it take for you to feel comfortable as a parent? Let's just leave it there. What would make you feel comfortable as a parent looking forward to your kids growing up?
Well, my philosophy of parenting already is that I don't lie to my kids. And when I say I don't lie to my kids, it's like, for instance, the discovery of America, Christopher Columbus, Santa Claus, all these man-made things, I tell them the truth. You know, my kids never know about a man coming in the chimney and bringing gifts. We sat down and had the talk that, you know, the reason why y'all got these things is because, you know, your parents, your mother and father worked hard and preserved some money and put aside for the occasion. That, you know, the whole method is to make sure you behave and do what you're supposed to do, and you will be rewarded in life. And, you know, those are some of my philosophies of parenting. So, with that being said, you know, my kids are entering their preteens now, that up to this point, we've had plenty of talk. You know, I haven't held back, always addressed things, and, you know, just hoping and wishing that, you know, they make the right decisions in their lives. Upon me and my wife, you know, teaching them and giving them the wisdom that they needed. And the village, not just us. We do have a village. You know, they're teachers and they're tutors and different people that plays effect in their lives. So, you know, if you are grounded and you put the time into your family, I think that, you know, positive things can come out. Unfortunately, in this day and age, there are not a lot of families, you know, two-parent households. So when you have that, you know, me as a father, you know, I can't just be a parent to my kids. I have to be a parent to the community. So those are just some of the things that we, in my family, can do to try to help make this situation better?
Well, as always, I commend you. A lot of young people, kind of get out of that concept of a village. And I think it's something that we need, especially in our community. Javon, I'm glad to have you back, my man. Even though we talked about some other social issues and whatnot, we definitely are going to be keeping up with Team Certified. Miss Tally has been signing some new fighters, and we're going to be, like I said, we're going to be, as of now, we're going to be in Sturgis on August 8th, unless things change. So you can follow our Facebook page. It's called The Takeover. And we've already, as I said, lined up a couple bouts. Look forward to more announcements as they come. Jabron, it's been quite some time since we had you on, man. So why don't you give us your final thoughts and tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Man, it was a great, great show, JK, man. I really enjoyed you guys, especially Boyd, man. I love someone who brings that energy, like I like to bring it. So shout out to Boyd. Can't wait to have him back on the show, man. And glad to tie it up with you, JK. And once again, shout out to the champ. Congratulations on his great week. And Scully, keep up the great work that he does, man, in the community and the things that he does for boxing. And you can find me on Facebook. I'm Jabron Clemens. That's J-A-B-R-A-N Clemens, C-L-E-M-O-N. JK, let me know where they can find you.
You can find us on Facebook. We got some new pages. One is the Dog Pound and the other is the Weekend Wrap. If you didn't see it, Scully sent me a great picture this week of Archie Moore's daughter along with Layla Ali's daughter. He had met them in Las Vegas, I believe it was a couple of years ago. And we've had Miss Moore on a couple of our boxing shows as well as our political shows, having been someone that grew up with Archie Moore. She was able to tell us some great stories as well as give us some insights into the unrest in our country during Archie's time. So you can catch us on the Dog Pound on Tuesdays with K9 Bunders, or you can catch us here on Sunday. So have a great night. We look forward to talking to you next week. And hey, champ, keep up the good work. We appreciate you, my man. Appreciate you, Devon. Talk to you next week.